Welcome to the Modern Classrooms Project Podcast. Each week, we bring you discussions with educators on how they use blended, self-paced, and mastery-based learning to better serve their students. We believe teachers learn best from each other, so this is our way of lifting up the voices of leaders and innovators in our community. This is the Modern Classrooms Project Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 134 of the Modern Classrooms Project podcast. My name is Toni Rose Deannon, she, they pronouns, a community engagement manager at MCP, and I am joined today by Ashley Kearney. So Ashley is an educator and organizer, as a proud Head Start alum, former District Teacher of the Year, Presidential Awardee for Excellence in Mathematics Teaching, and 2021 Albert Einstein Distinguished Educator Fellow in the House of Representatives. Ashley has used her influence on both the local and national level to ensure better outcomes for students and educators. Ashley is currently serving as a K through 12 district level manager working on transformation efforts that aim to ensure whole child and equitable practices at all levels to support students furthest from opportunity. Welcome, Ashley.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Y'all, Ashley is also a really good friend of mine. We crossed paths in 2017, maybe, right, Ashley?
Oh yeah, that sounds, it was before that. It was like 2015, something like that.
Oh my gosh, was it? Okay, well, we've been in each other's circles and I am just so amazed at everything that Ashley does. Honestly, like, I fangirl every time I'm around you, and you already know this. So, but I'm just really, really excited to be in this like space with you. And thank you so much for saying yes to the podcast. So before we get started, what's bringing you joy today?
What's bringing me joy is actually these clouds. Like, I'm a sucker for some gray weather on a nice Friday because it makes people kind of relax and calm down and enjoy the moment, even though I love sun. So honestly, the cloudy day is bringing me some joy out here.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And it's funny that you said that, Ashley, because I was actually coming back from Hawaii and we did a lot of just looking up at the clouds and figuring out what shapes they were making. And I haven't done that in years. So now moving forward, I want to remind myself to look up sometimes because they are like beautiful sights when we look up. So thank you for that. That was really beautiful. Okay. So tell us more about who you are and how you started your education journey.
I'm originally from DC. So, you know, you and I met in DC, but, it was a journey getting from DC and back to DC. So if, you know, folks kind of know anything about DC, say in the early 90s, and really, I don't know, any urban city, you know, during that time period for Black communities, kind of get an idea of what was happening around me during that foundational years, if you will, which is largely why, in the intro, what you said about, you know, Head Start, I truly thank my mother for believing in Head Start and the educators, particularly in that program, for really shaping my trajectory. But anyway, for many reasons, my family uprooted from DC. We ended up spending some time in Georgia, which I know you were in Georgia too. Before I went to undergrad in Florida. And so, it was in college when you say we started my education journey. I think it was in college that I started to understand how my childhood experiences had already determined that I would be an educator. I wish I knew sooner, but like that's when. And so the things that I experienced, you know, in DC really shaped me at my core from my first grade teacher. That's like who I point to. But then the way race showed up in my experiences in Georgia, it like activated me in a very different way, even for working for like one of the first Black mayors of a town. Like it was interesting. And so in college, I ended up having the privilege of being a part of like a dynamic sisterhood and engaging in community service for like a lengthy period of time. But the main service I did was at a school, right? And Toni, I did that for four years, even in the summer. And these students went to school like all day. And so I even had the teachers were living above the classrooms. So that was unique for me, but I even, ended up teaching the class at that school my senior year. So I had some extra time, outside of my coursework. And, I started to resist the fact that, you know, education may be my calling at first, but when I thought about, you know, how I was spending my time, what I loved doing, no matter what was going on, and the joy that it brought to have such an impact, on youth and on families, the education field really, you know, started feeling real natural to me. So as a result, I was in business and all of that, and I started to interrogate it, being real meta. Like, this was senior year, being real meta about questioning my original pursuit. And as a first gen, that was like, I don't know, giving me like panic even right now, thinking about like a complete shift. But my mom was always a giver and once even a substitute teacher. So I never looked at education as a career until like literally during that year, that school asked me. And so it took somebody seeing it in me and asking me to actually lean in to the idea of, you know, Ashley as an educator.
Yeah. And you can't get away from education. We need you here. There's so much work to be done. And I know that I really appreciate that perspective that you bring in as well, because it's just something that, you know, something that I just don't think about, honestly. Like, so for me as an educator, I really like to stay within my four walls. And so I just thought my impact was in those four walls with my students. And mm-hmm. so when you and I met and you were doing all of these things with the community, and you were, your reach was just so much more than mine, I was just like, oh, that's a possibility. Like, I just never thought, I don't know why I never thought it was a possibility to step outside of my four walls, but I think a lot of our educators feel that way. Mm-hmm. So, thank you so much for sharing your story. I just, again, really just love hearing from your perspective and just where and what you've done so far. So this episode, we're really focusing on community and what community means and what it entails, right? And so what is your definition of community, and how can we leverage the school and neighborhood community as educators?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably get in trouble for this in my personal relationships, but I'm all about emotion, all about feeling, all about how you feel, you know, and what's driving you. So I think when I look at community, I think it's about relationships and the quality of relationships, you know, where we're working towards like a shared purpose, no matter what it is. So I think that's my definition of community, is simply being in relationship. And you asked me how we can leverage that. As educators, when you say like you like to be, you know that other educators also think about being within their four walls and potentially not branching out, not seeing it as a possibility. But I think the school and our neighborhood literally opens those doors to us. So from the classroom, I mean, you're doing things because we're trying to impact the vision and possibilities of the school. But the school exists. I had to understand this too. Like, the school exists within the system as well, right? And all of these layers help impact, you know, what the students are going to do outside of the four walls. So understanding them really led me to go outside of the classroom to understand what they were dealing with, similarities that I had, differences that I had, what the community was doing as a result or not doing as a result. But there are so many opportunities as educators to engage in various angles of the field of education. And that's really where we can leverage the school to really say, well, what's the mission and vision of my school? What are the gap areas in my school? Okay, let me see how we can do something about this. Neighborhood and community, what are the assets of the community? How do we bridge that? And we can really activate people in the school and in the neighborhood by serving as that bridge to do good work. So for me, it's always seeing myself as an organizer. And it really took students for me to see myself as an organizer. I should say, when I first started, like, I was in my four walls thinking I could do everything. And that was a lie. Like, it was a lie. And like, it's funny, I had two Tonys in my class. This is a real story. Two Tonys in my class, Tony A and Tony J. I had to call them those. and it was Tony J. I looped with her. And she would just come by during lunch, and she would really, I mean, the smartest kid I've ever seen, like, work with ever. She would miss so many days, come back, and still, hands down, be like outperforming so many people. And I'm like, hold up, I'm not doing something right. Like, I got a challenge. I was trying to push myself. I'm asking other educators, you know, trying to see what was going on. And honestly, it wasn't necessarily the things that the educators were doing in the school. Like, you couldn't point blame at the people who were working so hard. Like, I tried. It's like, we need to do better. It's like, when I realized we were doing all that we could, you know, then it's like, okay, well, somebody else got to do something. And so that's when she shared that she didn't think that she would be prepared. When she shared her fears, and I'm literally working with her and looking at myself, and I'm like, oh, hands down, that's a problem. And so, yeah, she's the real one that got me seeing myself as an organizer by way of going out to see who could do something about the things that we couldn't do through our own, with our own hands and our own, you know, expertise inside of the building.
Oh my gosh, Ashley, you just said a lot, right? So in the beginning, you've solely focused on relationships. Community is all about relationships. And I think this is really important for our listeners to understand. And I know that, like, we sound like a broken record when we talk about developing relationships with students, with colleagues, with our communities, with, you know, caregivers, stakeholders, all of that. But relationship is really important, right? Because if you don't trust that person, nothing's going to get done. Or there's a lot of hesitation and a lot of, like, not really genuine work that's happening. And so mm-hmm. I also really appreciate the fact that your definition of community is a shared purpose. And that kind of just shifts a lot for me, because I know I've told you multiple times, right? Being here in Washington, I'm looking for a community. And I have yet to find the community for me with that same shared purpose that I am looking for. So it's really taking a lot of intent for me on my behalf to try and find this community just so that I could have this shared purpose. And I really love that. I was never ever able to really articulate that. So I appreciate you doing that for me. Mm. And then as far as, like, schools, right? And I, again, like, you just being able to say, like, we got to do everything we can for this student. And then understanding that, like, you know what, we did everything we could. And that sometimes takes a lot of vulnerability to say, like, I did everything I could. There's nothing more I can do. So what, like, who can I ask for help? Who can I ask to, like, bring in and support the students that we have in this school? And I also really like that, because sometimes I feel like, I mean, of course, education is on fire. It's been on fire. Mm-hmm. So our educators are tired, right? They're exhausted. And mm-hmm. so to think about, like, you know, there's a lot of pressure from society. There's just a lot of pressure everywhere, honestly, for educators to perform, quote unquote, the way that they're supposed to. And so to say that, like, you know what, I did my best and I'm going to have to ask for help, I feel like that takes a lot as well. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate, you know, your student Tony, huh? Beautiful name, by the way, for pushing you and making you realize that you can become an organizer to create that community of support so that she could thrive. So that's really, really cool. And I also remember, and it's wild to think that, like, I never even, like, thought about it, but I know when I first moved to DC, and you know how we have the PD week before school starts. Mm-hmm. One of the things that my principal did at the time was we had a bus and we just drove around, like, the whole staff just drove around the community, the neighborhood, and basically pointed out, like, you know, your kids are from this community. And so you need to be aware of what this community has to offer and what it lacks to have a better understanding of that student showing up in your classroom. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, that's, why have I never done this before? But I feel like that school leader was really intentional with saying, like, this is where our kids come from. And you need to know exactly where they're coming from so you can better support them in ways that you didn't think you could. And even, like, when I taught in Baltimore City, Ashley, like, it wasn't the school leaders. It was more so, like, our team leader who pushed for us to do home visits and to really connect with the caregivers, because, you know, we had the parent school night, but then, like, we would hardly have anybody show up. And then we realize, oh, it's because it's our time. We're making it, like, where it's available for us, but we're not making it accessible and available for others. Like, not taking into consideration, like, you know, the hours of, you know, when people are working and, like, just lots of other responsibilities happening. And so we decided, like, okay, cool. We're going to make this time. Then we're going to ask our community, like, hey, when's the best time? And you don't even have to come to us. We'll come to you and make sure that we are continuing this conversation and this relationship so that we can better support students. And mm-hmm. I really, really like that. And so, you know, with some educators who are like, nah, I'm never going to go into anybody's homes or, like, you know, like, I don't have the time and capacity for that. I just literally just go in and go out and that's just how it's going to go. What are some things that you can kind of, what are some things that you can help teachers understand or like alleviate some of these like stressors or hesitations when it comes to community building?
Yeah, you said a mouthful, and even your, you know, responses in terms of not only just I heard about listening, I heard about, you know, relationships, and even going into the leader saying going into the community. One thing that's important is that when we go into the community, we sometimes have our perspectives on what we see in our upbringing. And so we're seeing the world and the environment through that lens. And part of that is also assessing like, hey, am I looking at this from an asset-based understanding, or am I thinking sometimes problematic ways of like academia and what it might say about this environment and all the struggles that persist and all of the like challenges, and like, am I coming to the community looking at it that way, or am I coming at it with an open mind, open heart, and really looking for opportunities to understand in a positive way? And I'm saying that because even when I brought up my upbringing, you know, in DC at first, a lot of people will look at that and name the challenges that I think are extremely important, because that sets the context for like society, what's happening in society. But if you look at a more granular level, my experience, you couldn't tell me from that school that I was in that I wasn't loved. You couldn't tell me that my family didn't care. You couldn't tell me that, you know, they weren't heroes in their own way, or sheroes even. So in that way, I'm moving into like the strategies I think that can help people create community is just open up your mind about what community is. And it doesn't take a lot of people to consider a space or a group community, right? And the community environment could take, you know, different arenas as well. So even with home visits, you don't really have to go in someone's house. It's like you can meet up somewhere that's close in proximity. You know what I mean? That can be a home, quote unquote, home visit, right? What feels home to us. But anyway, the biggest thing that I would say with any of this is, for me, in my experience, it was always trying to aim to authentically co-create. Because if you are, to your point, creating schedules that only work for you, et cetera, you miss opportunities. But co-creating requires us to listen and to think about how we are, again, in relationship, working together. So how are we working together to get to an end result? And if we understand what we're trying to do, then 9 times out of 10, we're not going to have problems with getting people to meet us where we meet us where we are, and us meeting them halfway as well. And without the stigma of what it looks like to meet halfway. Also, another strategy, I think, and this, I guess, is broad, but really stepping up in, you know, gaps to build community based on your strengths, right? And I'm saying strengths by coming into a space. For me, it's asking how I can help, and not like a savior, how can I help? Like, how can I help in terms of like, what do my students need, right? And what do the parents of my students need? And I'm also thinking about my parents and the skills or lack of skills that they had, but how they desire what's best for me. But what is my role in this? And then, you know, what do I have to give? Because we also got to think about capacity, but we also have to think about like our expertise. Like, what is it that I have to give that's going to be like a no-brainer for me, something that might be natural? And then what am I called to do in that? And I think really taking the inner perspective, like looking at yourself first, assessing yourself first, looking at your identity and mindset first, and then being open to, again, co-creating and stepping up with the gaps, into the gaps based on those. It makes it easy for me.
I mean, essentially what I'm hearing you say, like the common theme is really like, you need to know who you are as an individual. And so it's going to require a lot of soul searching and just self-reflection, right? I really liked the fact that you said, the first thing you said was open your mind. And this is something that I tell educators all the time is that, hey, let's check our biases. Like, everyone has biases. And what's not okay is that when we don't check it and we just continue to follow those biases and believe those biases, right? And so I really appreciate you stating the fact that, like, you know what, like, here are some questions that we can ask ourselves to really get to know ourselves, so that we know how we can better serve our community. And I also really like that you stated, like, how can I help and not in a savior way? Because that is something that we've talked about previously in the podcast as well, is this, like, this savior complex, right? and having like these misconceptions and assumptions about a community based on what you've seen on media or whatever, right? And I mean, we're going to name the thing, right, Ashley? There's a lot of teachers who teach kids that don't look like them. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So, I mean, even more so, like white teachers teaching black and brown kids. And so there's a lot of misconceptions, right? And so I think like I would really like to push our teachers, our educators, I mean, even educators of color, right? To like really check in on how they're feeling. What are things that are coming up for them when they're coming into a community? Is it like, oh my gosh, everything is bad. This is awful. Like this student can't do it because they have a quote unquote bad home life, whatever that means, right? And so it's like, well, how about like instead of lowering expectations, we continue with the high expectations and then we provide those scaffolding and the support so that students can feel supported and successful. Another thing too that you said was that what do my students need? And this is again, and what do the families and caregivers need as well? And I really like that you said, I also think about my own parents. And I think coming into spaces like in education, right? Like your stories make an impact in how you show up in the classroom, in front of your community, in front of your students. And so, and our students are really good at paying attention. And so another thing that I tell my educators that I work with, Ashley, is that like, if you don't know what they need, don't come up with it on your own. Bring them in.
Like, that's the co-creation part. Yeah.
Right. That's like the authentic, like authentically co-create that you were talking about, right? Like bring in our babies. They have a lot to say. They have a lot to say and they know exactly what they need when we actually give them that space to say what they need. And it's not just any space. It has to be a brave space, knowing that they're going to be listened to, knowing that like whatever comes out of their mouth is not going to come back and bite them later, right? And that's something sometimes we forget about is like, is I know sometimes for me, I'm just like, oh, I think this is what the students need. And then my students will be straight up and be like, nah, Misty, this ain't it. and so that's why I'm like, okay, just bring in, like invite people in, honestly. And when people correct you, thank them because they actually had the time and energy to correct you so that you know better. And it's not one of those defensive, like, oh my gosh, that's not what I mean. Like, you know, it's not what I mean. It's not even what I said, whatever, right? It's just kind of like being receptive and being open. And so that's kind of, these are all great. And you kind of touched, you just kind of touched some stuff on this too. When, you know, I was, our next question is really like, I recently heard the phrase doing to communities rather than doing with communities. And this is when you were talking about the authentically co-creating with communities, right? And so we've talked about the savior complex and wanting to come in and fix things in the community that are not their own, right? So how can we ensure that communities are part of this decision-making process rather than not? How can I and others be mindful of actions and thoughts, right? Because really, every human being thinks they're doing good things.
Yeah.
We like to think we're doing good things. how can we just continue to ensure that people are actually part of it and we're not asking the questions that we already have answers for? You know what I mean, Ashley? Like, I have this question. I'm going to ask you a question, but I already know what I want to hear from you. So I'm going to ask the questions in a way that I'm going to get the answer that I want.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's like a major pet peeve of mine. Like it's up there in the top five.
Same.
Because, okay, so part of the experience with being, for me, an organizer, I was doing some coalition work. And this is speaking on you just now saying like, hey, how being framing it in a way that you already wanted to frame it, because you already know what you want to do. And I found that sometimes in coalition work, especially when it gets large, people may bring up issues, but because people are so, some of the people that come to a space are coming from different fields within different aspects of the education field, if you will, and they have different goals. And some of them are more politically inclined or astute. So they kind of know what's a hot topic, if you will. But that doesn't mean that that is what people are experiencing on the ground. And that is a high that doesn't mean that it's a high priority for them. But I found that you can bring conversations or topics to people, like a question, just a rounds question. and literally listen to what they say. And when you're listening to what the community is saying and you're jotting down things, something as simple as when it's over, checking back and saying, like, I heard these things, right? But then I take those things or those themes back to this open space, right, where all these people are coming together with their themes as well to act on whatever the problem is that we're trying to, quote unquote, fix. And then it becomes a narrowing down into these buckets. And you'll notice certain trends with buckets from all these different areas. And it's like, yeah, urban communities may deal with similar issues, but every space has a unique context and what might be important to them. So that's like my like complete red flag that hopefully is not too like a tangent from what we're saying. But in terms of like, how can we ensure that communities are part of the decision-making process? It's literally flagging those things. Like when I see that, I'm like, okay, well, when you put it in those buckets, let me take those buckets back. I'm not afraid to circle back to the group or be transparent or speak up in those moments and say, well, that's not what I heard. Or that's not, you know, can we elaborate? Like let's define some of the words that we're using when you make up these themes and buckets that you want to work on. And then also in the process, like just asking people how they want to engage in the process. Sometimes we even create roles for people that they don't necessarily want. Some people are more active than not. And we have this perception that, this is a good one. Abbott Elementary. I was watching that the other week. And
such a great show.
Like the parent comes up there and they're trying to get them to like sign some petition or whatever. And you might assume the parent is not going to be gung-ho about it, but immediately it's like, oh yeah, I know all about this. Give me this. I'll sign. Like, and just something as simple as that, like not making assumptions, is huge. So me, when I say like, what can we be mindful of in terms of like actions or thoughts, mindful of not making assumptions, mindful of, when things seem like there are buckets that are too broad and not really speaking the truth that the community told, and being mindful of your capacity and making promises that you can't keep because you might need to circle back, especially as things unfold, and considering the roles that folks want to play in whatever problem we're trying to address, not necessarily fix on our own, but again, together.
Oh, that's so good, Ashley. That's so good. How do people want to engage? I don't think I've ever asked that question, honestly. I've just always been like, oh, here are the ways that you can engage and pick one, and kind of opening it up instead of, you know, saying like, here's a menu of options, but also just being like, you know what, let's just start off with like, how do you want to engage? And I think that in itself is powerful. Yeah, having the same common language, right? Like, hey, let's define some of these words that we're using, because again, words are powerful, and sometimes people use them in a way to harm folks and also mm-hmm. to elevate and advocate for folks, right? So I think like, I like the questions that you said, like, hey, let's elaborate, or let's discuss more, or let's define these terms so that we have the common language that we need and that we're all on the same page. So it's a lot of communication, like you said, right? Circling back and making sure. And again, this is like vulnerability, right? Because I think sometimes folks are afraid to like circle back and do a follow-up and like ask more clarifying questions because they may be deemed like, oh, you're not paying attention or whatever it is that they think. And so I think this is really important to name too.
Yeah, I should say like, in just to like kind of hopefully make it more plain, like I'm recognizing my role in different spaces, like me talking to my students and talking to the families and talking to the community might be different than me taking my role and what I know about the space that I just left into a community of coalition where I know that there's a shared language here too. There's its own culture in this space. And so really checking myself when I enter with the voices that I brought with me, right? Because oftentimes they have these community spaces where actually the community is not invited. So now you're almost a representative of the community and really having to say, am I authentically being present for this community and with this community in their physical absence, right? And then saying what I need to say and being bold about it without the fear of what's going to happen as a result. And then being transparent enough to go back and be like, yeah, this is what happened. And sometimes even like saying, this is what we're going to have to do as a like a side action together to push into whatever spaces because that's needed.
Wow. That's a lot of like self-awareness and a lot of just like boldness. And I love that. When you were talking, I was just like, oh, I got to work on that. I got to work on this. Cool. What a beautiful life. Okay. I mean, clearly, Ashley, you've done some really, really, really great work for just your community. And I love that you're so passionate about, you know, being in DC and providing for this community. And so I lack that only because I'm always constantly moving every 3 years. And so by the time I actually get that community, I'm out. You know, you're doing all of this work and you're speaking for really just trying to be authentically speaking for communities. And so how are you taking care of yourself, honestly? Like, how are you balancing being an educator as well as being an art organizer and like being in all of these different spaces? And you've done this for quite a long time. I know that like you're just constantly busy. And I'm so curious, how do you balance it all out? How do you take care of yourself? What does self-care look like for you?
I mean, that's a good question. I think, I think taking care of myself really looks like knowing my capacity. And sometimes that is shifting gears or shifting roles within the space. Like I was leading the coalition, but sometimes it's finding another co-chair to step up so then I can just lead a committee versus doing committee and leading the organizations and planning. Like sometimes that becomes too much. So finding other folks that can step up into the role so that the work can continue is very helpful. And for me, a part of self-care. Another part of self-care is knowing that I'm doing 100%. And it's, I know it still sounds like work, but again, for me, it's not, this does not work for me. So I should name that because for some folks, it seems like work. But this is like very much core mission driven, like how I live my life, because not only does it bring me joy, I know that it is better for me as a person who identifies with the community that I am serving. And so what's good for me and good for them is good for all of us at some place in this movement. So so by that, I think daily, the actions that I take just are what they are. So I'm going to name that as like something that is known before I make it seem like self-care would go for everyone who feels otherwise. But again, so self-care is also knowing that I'm going into a space and my expectation is that I show up by one, representing like I said I would, saying what I said I was going to do and take it away. Anything that's out of my control is out of my control, but I will find someone or some space that has some control and or has some influence that could penetrate that space and not try to feel like I have to do everything, you know, by myself. So that is a form for me as self-care. So as an educator, I had the mentality of like, even in the classroom, I'm in my four walls, but everything that happens in this space has trickled down in some way from somewhere else. So it's a part of something larger. So until you can influence that larger space, it's almost like we're always being responsive to, and self-care is being proactive for me. And so figuring out how to do that to where then what's in this smaller space is like a well-oiled machine and responsive to the needs, right? That's different. And it creates a space where you do have opportunity to co-create. You do have patience. You do have a climate and culture that is positive. You do have parents that want to get involved. And you do have community leaders that know exactly where to go when they need some people to give voice to something, because they know that you've been there, done that before, and made it known that, you know, folks want you to listen to them, or the community, your students want you to listen, want them to listen to them. And so, yeah. After the beginning of the work, it kind of starts doing its own thing.
I love that. And I know as like a friend of yours, I know that you do a really good job of self-care and like hanging out with the people that you love, to just kind of pause what you're doing and just kind of breathe in and enjoy and laugh and all of that good stuff. Right. And so I appreciate you saying that too.
I should name that too. But all the people that I hang out with, like 90% of them have been in education, which says something. Mm-hmm. And they always have something to say about education. So it's like you get that kitchen cabinet because you also need to vent about all the things, especially when it's identity related. So finding people in your field who are a safe space for you to name the tensions is good. And then it does help, you know, to have my dog and, you know, those type of things too.
Oh yeah. Dogs are, I always say this, dogs are like those, living antidepressants, right? Like they make sure you're good.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I mean, really what's coming up for me is that self-care is aligning with your values. And that's another push, right? We need to know what we value, before anything else, just so that we can have a better understanding of, again, how we navigate the spaces that we take up. And so, okay, well, listeners, we're going to take a quick break for an announcement. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Ashley's experiences. Hi, listeners. This is Toni Rose Deannon. We are now offering two scholarships opportunities available to educators looking to create blended, self-paced, mastery-based classrooms. One of them is a Learning Differences Scholarship open to special education and ELL educators. The other one is a Minnesota Educators of Color Scholarship and open to all Minnesota educators of color. We'll be linking the scholarships page in the show notes, so please check that out. All right, we're back with Ashley. So Ashley, recently you've been doing work on like education policy. I know that you talk about it a lot and sometimes it goes in one ear and out the other for me. Because I just lack knowledge and I just don't feel confident about it. And I know that it's, again, when you're talking about the larger picture, right? Like the influence, this is something that I know I need to work on. And so what are one to two things that like I should know about how education policy works and how it might impact what I do as an educator?
I mean, you know what? We all know policy. We all know education policy. And that's the first thing that I say educators should know, is that you actually do know. You actually do it every day. And the fact that people use terminology or try to make something complex so that it so that folks who are actually in the work, doing the work, lack access to that space or seemingly lack access to the space, I think is huge. So education policy is literally at a basic level, rules and regulations of day-to-day operations of a school, right, in the field. So I was recently on like a panel for a huge like mathematics specific panel, and it was talking about actions, policies, and activating like resources. And there was some well-renowned panelists on there, and in the discussion, sort of like as preparation for the session, we meet, and they were just like some conversation came up about not feeling confident or not feeling confident about going down a certain avenue of policy because it can get too complex, if you will, and they may not have a context for that. And then I just posed the question, well, like, you know, don't classrooms have policies? Like, the classrooms have policies and procedures as well as schools, right? And so when we think about it on a very basic level of you setting up your syllabus, right, those are policies. And they govern how that space is going to be operated in addition to whatever, you know, you co-create with your students. So as long as we know that we are in education policy, we are driving policy. Education policy is driven by people, and it works because we make it work, and it won't work if we don't want it to work. So, like, first thing is you do know. Second thing is it works because we want it to work, and it doesn't work if we don't want it to work. And I think policy impacts, obviously, you know, what we do as educators, and it ultimately shapes, you know, how we go about setting up policies in our schools and literally how. For me, even how I think about philosophies and even what schools I choose to work in. Like, if your vision and mission says something, or how you respond to policies or things that you create in your space, that speaks to me on a different level. I talked about how, and now I know my partner will laugh at this. I actually am emotional, so I'm going to admit it here. So I actually do go off emotion a lot, right? So, so I just hope we can see ourselves and our practice as, you know, action research that can literally drive what the future of policy looks like versus us kind of like blindly accepting what policies are and feeling like helpless about it.
Whew. Okay, Ashley. Well, thank you for validating me. this is good. You're absolutely right. Like, classroom policies, school policies, those are all we do know, and it works because we make it work. So I appreciate that. And I think it's resonating for me because I talk to so many educators all the time, and they're always like, well, I don't know this. And I always say, like, you do know it. And so you're doing that same thing for me. And it's interesting. Such an interesting thing. Okay, we're going to shift to school boards, right? Because again, this is another thing that, like, I claim to know nothing about. And I was recently informed that, like, there were approximately like 24,000 school board seats up for re-election this year. And you have some experience running for school board. So tell us a little bit more about that process. And also just like anything about being on the school board, like what that means and how that impacts our role as an educator.
I mean, I talked about being, you know, a community organizer, thanks to Tony J, like being a catalyst for that. But the coalition work will really help you see and power map, you know, in your local community. And as like people started to understand what I was trying to do, and as I started to understand what different spaces meant by being there observing and like lending a hand here and there, folks will, you know, ask you to step up in certain ways. So anyway, like I did the leadership on like the local ed council that was specific to my school where I was working. But then the journey to school board really came about in that process when I went to the House of Representatives. And when I was in the House of Representatives, not only was like my identity just, you know, just glaring every single day, in all aspects, but my experience I had in the classroom is what I was bringing to that space. But I would get some pushback or having to work extra hard, and I recognized that just by every day seeing the power of the person with the pen and literally the will of the person in the seat, how this person galvanized their district, what the local level, the power in the local level, specifically who they choose to listen to, how they choose to listen to go about that work. And it's like, I had some opinions about it. And I'm like, we could do this and we could do that. And coming from a space where you literally have done it on such a micro level, you honestly do better understand what it might take to bridge the gap between these larger spaces and that space. And so it pushed me to think about, you know, if I could make a change, clearly I'm fighting here. Like, I'd rather fight in a space where I have, one, again, my capacity, strengths, I know what I could bring. And then two, where I know the decisions that are sort of piling in the work from the bottom up, if you will, is being influenced by what's happening on the ground, and versus like Congress sort of like pushing federal policies and making it come down. It's like, no, you've actually looked at what's happening at the state level, right? And then people come and propose things to you, and you try to do these models and you branch it out. And then it starts trickling back down to where now the school boards have to say, oh, the state said this. Oh, we have to do this. We have to implement this. And then we have to figure out how to do it. So in some, like my journey towards the school board was having the understanding that as federal policies and grants or whatever starts to come down, the decision making and how that get implemented in the context of your local community is from the people that's serving on the local level. And I knew that I wanted to be somebody that not only understood and could represent, but had the will and drive to do what I think should be done. And that is, again, meeting people where they are in all the ways possible and not thinking so traditionally about how to do that. And so the school board really has a lot of power, not only in terms of curriculum or even recommendations or listening to or requiring audits of, or just the connection and relationship to the school district itself. And the sizes vary, but in my, where I am actually trying, where I was trying to run for school board is where I live, the neighbor to my school, but it happens to be in Prince George's County. We're talking about over 600 something thousand residents. And we're talking about a district that I would have had like 26 schools, happens to be a school where my parents graduated from that would have been in that district. So I think it's important for educators to know that a lot of what we're talking about in terms of like how the governing of day-to-day operations, something as simple as like how in some areas, the calendar, the school year calendar, like how breaks get decided. You know what I mean? It's all in collaboration with these different levels of government. And so I think my journey was understanding that I can go in that space and I do have a right to be in that space. And as an educator, I'm well within the realm of expertise needed to be in that space and perform well on behalf of students and families and educators.
Ooh, I am just so inspired. I mean, this is beautiful. Like, you're right. We do have the right to take up that space. We do have the right to be in that space. And I didn't even know all of this, Ashley, like the calendar and the curriculum and all of that. I had no idea. But that's all very, I just don't know what to do with that information. I'm kind of processing it. I'm trying to figure out how I can continue advocating and elevating these things, right? And so I like that you said that just being a part of the conversation and being part of the process to disrupt the traditional way of thinking. And this is something that I also like to say that I do, is like disrupting the traditional way that we've been doing things, because it hasn't been working, honestly. But it takes a lot of effort and energy to figure out how to continue to disrupt that traditional way of learning and also making sure that it's impactful. Lots of thoughts this morning. I mean, yeah, give me a minute. All right. So Ashley, I'm going to toot your horn for you for a minute. Listeners, I don't know if you heard me say that Ashley was a teacher of the year, and I was actually there to like root her on, just hooting and hollering during that time. I was just so like amazed by you, and it was not a surprise for me at all when I found out. And so, and then you just continue to do even more amazing things after the fact. And so how has this impacted like your teaching and learning journey? I know that when I think about becoming teacher of the year, right? DC teacher of the year, like a state teacher of the year, whatever. I'm just like, oh, that's so much work. how has this impacted your teaching and learning journey?
So it's a lot of work, yeah. But being a district teacher of the year, I felt like I was like, okay. I heard it's like 1200 or something of folks, you know, and so me being selected, at first I was kind of like in awe, like, wow, okay, like this really happened. But then I started thinking about all the people that are around me and what they do. Educators, I'm talking about educators. And I'm like, I know people that do this and do that. And it started being like, why aren't they, you know, teachers of the year? They could be, right? And sometimes, again, just like somebody, you know, asked me, would I be a teacher? It took my volunteer experience for them to say, can you work here, right? For me to be like, can I see myself here, right? But then to have people be in a space and for others to then say, wow, like I can be there, and me to say, like, you definitely can. And you definitely should. And you definitely should seek to be in those spaces, even if other people don't actively nominate or whatever. Like, you deserve to bring your talents to a space where then you can have influence. So I was on the teacher's cabinet before that. But after being teacher of the year, it really opened my mind to how many people then want your perspective, right? And it's like, yeah, they want your perspective, but then you have an opportunity, a larger sphere of influence to say, and here are the perspectives of my peers, and here's the space where you can go. So now you have this sort of like platform, however much larger than the one that you had. There are folks who want to see, you know, what you're doing, but not only seeing what you're doing, then it gives you an opportunity, at least for me, to show them more about what my students are doing and helping them push their positive narratives into a space, right? And then the network, just like understanding how to connect with certain people and then building a different community, right? A community of like-minded individuals in a different way, because you can be a part of many different communities for various reasons, because you have different goals that you're trying to reach. But for me, I think it impacted my teaching and learning journey by just understanding how important it is to make other to help others educators know that they are deserving of a space, and to bring opportunities to them, and to always share, and to always recommend. Anytime something comes, I'm like, yep, I know somebody. Like, and making sure that, like, you thought of me on it. I did. and I'll write you a letter of recommendation, right? Because hopefully some kind of title holds some type of weight somewhere, but always having that context. And even now, working at the district level, it's like, in the district where I won Teacher of the Year, you know, people are excited to have me in the space, and often will ask opinion about somebody who is an expert educator in the district and who has been in the district for over a decade. It's like you've seen, you know, multiple iterations of things and initiatives. And so it's like there's an opportunity there as well to authentically make sure I still wear the teacher hat, and to make sure that anything, that policy, program, anything has teacher voice put to it, similar as someone would with, you know, student voice. So I think that has impacted my teaching and learning journey, is to make sure that a teacher's voice is always at the table.
Oh, Ashley, I think I just fell more in love with you. this is, I mean, you've just always done such a great job of like elevating others. And I really love hearing your stories. And I swear I could just listen to you talk all day, honestly. So thank you for sharing that. And thank you just for doing all the work. And because it's a lot, and you continue to show up, and you continue to do it in such a positive way, and also so mindful of how you're navigating the spaces. And so what do you hope to see in the future? What goals do you have when it comes to education?
What goals do I have when it comes to education? I mean, I'm gonna start small with like, for me, right now I'm working in like learning development sciences, but I'm a manager doing like systems integration. So my goal right now that's in front of me, in addition to making sure that teacher voice is being heard, is to make sure that the things that an education system leaders say they want to do on paper lives through in action, and on the right papers, in the way that is explicit. So when we say equity, let's say racial equity, like, right? When we say whole child, and we talk about how we want students to thrive, let's talk about being human-centered, and let's talk about the whole educator as well. When we go in and we observe educators, and we're saying, what do we want to look for in this person's practice, in their classroom, et cetera, we also consider the context in which that teacher and those students are learning in, the conditions that are set forth by the leaders, and then as well as what are we doing to support those schools in actuality. So my goal is to make sure that at every level of a system, that there's some accountability, there is some grace, but ultimately that the students have what they need in order to thrive.
I love that. It's accountability and grace, mm-hmm. right? I think sometimes we really just focus on the accountability part and forget the grace part. We forget that we are human beings that come in with so many emotions and so many experiences. And so I really like that piece. And you're right, right? Like having it on the right papers. I think one thing that came up for me was like, we sometimes create barriers unintentionally or maybe intentionally, right? And you were also saying like how education policy, we come up with terminology to just kind of confuse folks when there's really like a basic understanding. So I really appreciate you stating that. So thank you. And that's a great goal to have, Ashley. So keep me posted on that. So how can our listeners connect with you, Ashley?
Yeah. You can connect with me on Twitter and or LinkedIn. It's the same at Ashley C. Kearney, K-E-A-R-N-E-Y.
Beautiful. All right. So with that being said, thank you so, 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 so much, Ashley. Next time I'm in DC, definitely hanging out again.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Continue. Like, I just really appreciate this really important conversation and just me coming in here and just, you know, saying like, I don't know anything about it. And so thank you for teaching me as always. And so Listeners, remember, you can always email us at podcast@modernclassrooms.org, and you can find the show notes for this episode at podcast.modernclassrooms.org/134. We'll have this episode's recap and transcript uploaded to the Modern Classrooms blog on Friday, so be sure to check there, check back in the show notes for this episode if you'd like to access those. Thank you all for listening. Have a great week, and we'll be back next Sunday.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find links to topics and tools we discussed in our show notes for this episode. And remember, you can learn more about our work at www.modernclassrooms.org, and you can learn the essentials of our model through our free course at learn.modernclassrooms.org. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Modern Class Proj, that's P-R-O-J. We are so appreciative of all you do for students and schools. Have a great week, and we'll be back next Sunday with another episode of the Modern Classrooms Project podcast.